Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing here today? Hey, I am Ann Eller, and I have a real treat, I think, for you here today. It's probably one of my longest customers. I wasn't going to say oldest, but longest customers of Sharp Facets. She has followed us wherever we've been here in Greenwood. In fact, many, many years ago when we were in Burton Plaza, she walked in and she had this long white hair. And your first thought was, who is this person?
That's still a lot of people's first thought.
But Kathy Bradley, she has I would have to say you have dedicated your life to helping other people.
I think that sums it up pretty well, yeah.
That's right. Worked at Witten Center.
That's
Tell
right.
us a little bit about where you've worked and how you got to, so we can get to how you are doing what you're doing today. It's a fantastic story, and where we're going to go from there, I think everybody will find very fascinating.
Thank you, Ann. I worked for about 6 months with a local senior citizens organization in Lawrence County, and then went to work at Witten Center, which was just in the process of converting from custodial care and warehousing to providing activities and training, what they termed active treatment for
people. When was that? When did that change start to happen?
The mid-70s.
Mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. And I was involved in the conversion of one of the very first residential buildings there, where they went from having huge rooms with, looked like barracks, with beds all strewn throughout, to subdividing those rooms into smaller bedroom areas and activity areas.
That had to have been a fascinating time to be involved in all this, Kathy.
It was. It was an experience that cannot be duplicated, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But on the other hand, it gave me a lot of insight and a lot of different types of experiences that served me very well throughout my career.
So you started there. And then where did you go?
I went to Columbia, to Babcock Center, which was, rather than being an institution, a community-based provider of services for people with developmental disabilities, and worked there for 7 years, and did pretty much the same thing I had done at Witten, only did it in a community throughout the Columbia area.
Mm-hmm.
Worked with children and adults, and worked with some school districts settings, and thoroughly enjoyed that, learned an awful lot. And at the time that the position of executive director for the Kershaw County Board of Disabilities came available, I felt like I was ready to take on that challenge. And so I managed that agency. I directed that agency for 16 and a half years, exactly half of my career.
Well, you know, that gives you a lot of background for everything. Now, you went ahead and you've retired.
I have retired.
Retired, and now you're working probably more than when you were really working. You know, I think the thing about work is, for when you work for an agency or something, you can shut it down eventually, right?
Well, when I retired, I shut it down.
But the other, you felt you worked all the time?
I was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 32 of the 33 years of my career, yeah.
That's a lot, Kathy.
It was.
And that has to wear on you.
It did.
Yeah.
I'm a lot healthier now.
Well, you look great. You look
Thank
great.
You.
You look great. But, you know, by working, you know, one of the things that I think that somewhat in the state, I don't know where we rank as far as a state, as far as disabilities and working with them and everything, but I do know, having done work with the Genetic Center over here,
yes,
and the coordination between the state and the Genetic Center, it really has put us, I think, from what I understand, very much ahead of the curve from a lot of other states.
I think we are, yes. I don't know that we're the premier, mm-hmm, but I do know that we are among the better states in the nation in providing services for people with developmental disabilities.
And I think, isn't one of the things that the state strives is to be able to make people with developmental disabilities independent,
to the
self-serving, to
the
best
extent,
of their,
absolutely, to the extent that their abilities will allow, and then to make them, to support them to participate in their communities, regardless of their level of independent functioning. So that's what I did.
That's what you did.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting because this leads into what you do today, which...
It very much does.
That's why I was going where I was going because I think that it does lead into what you're doing today. And, of course, your mother was actually the catalyst for this happening. Actually, I guess we'd have to say your sister was the real catalyst.
Yeah, she said a couple of things that stuck in my head.
Tell us about those. Okay. I think those are pretty interesting points and things that probably have crossed a lot of our minds about, you know, what can we do?
Right. Well, my mother in 2009 suddenly advanced into severe dementia, and she couldn't continue to live in her home because of the difficulties she was having, and so she was placed in a nursing facility. She had a very difficult time, and the situation was very hard on her. She wasn't getting the care and services she needed in a manner that she found acceptable. And she had lost her ability to speak, so she couldn't communicate her needs verbally with her staff. She used her behavior, which of course the staff labeled as agitation and noncompliance. And since I had worked in long-term care for 33 years, and for 23 of those years I had a nursing home administrator's license, I was very familiar with the services and the quality of care that a person should receive. And I was able to advocate on behalf of our mother, interpreting her behavior, as it were, to enable her to get the services that she needed.
Gracie's real good at that, at getting me to understand what she needs by not speaking, but she does in a matter of way.
Exactly. She has some behaviors that she will demonstrate to communicate with you. Exactly. And
I think you know what we all do, whether we're communicating in adult language or whether it's our being sullen with somebody or turning your back on somebody or yelling at somebody. We communicate.
All of it is
those.
Communicative. Yes, it is. Well, early in 2010, my sister made two comments that I just could not get out of my head. She observed that our mother had been a lifelong activist for social justice on behalf of people without a voice. And if somebody had asked our mother 20 years ago if she would go through this really difficult experience that she was having, if the outcome was better care for all people in nursing homes, our mother would have said yes. That's the kind of person she is. And it hit me in that moment that through her behavior, she was expressing how difficult her situation was, and she was still advocating for those without a voice. It's just that she was a member of that group now.
And your sister brought these up to you.
My sister not only said what she said about my mother's advocacy and that she would say yes to this treatment if it meant better care for people, but then she also said, Kathy, what do families who don't have a you, somebody that knows these regulations and knows what's supposed to be happening, what do they do? And as I was driving my 86 miles back home that evening, I just could not get those two comments out of my head. And by the time I got home, I had a clear vision of what we were being called to do in response to our mother's experiences.
So you walked in the house and
I walked in the house and my husband was waiting for me and I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to establish a nonprofit. I'm going to call it Our Mother's Voice, and it's going to give information to families so that they can be empowered advocates for their loved ones in nursing homes, and it's going to be Mama's voice carrying on through us.
And what did your husband
say? My husband said, very characteristically, that is the craziest and the most wonderful thing I have ever heard.
Well, there you go. So, and so was born. And when was it that you actually got it to be a nonprofit organization?
We received our nonprofit corporate status on December 9 of 2010.
Wow. And your mother is still living?
She is still living, which is kind of amazing. Usually when people go into the severe stage and have to go into an institution, it's a very time-limited situation.
Now, your mother does not have Alzheimer's, per se.
She was diagnosed at the age of 72 with presenile dementia, non-Alzheimer's type, whatever that means.
That is quite a mouthful.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. But but the results are basically the
same.
They
are, yes. And honestly, Alzheimer's is kind of a rule-out diagnosis anyway, because the only way to know for sure is to examine the brain during autopsy. So
you can't take a piece of a living brain and determine it. No.
No.
Okay. Hey, on that note, I think we should hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Hey, if you've got a question for Kathy, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're talking with Kathy Bradley, and it's Our Mother's Voice is the nonprofit organization. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. We're talking about Our Mother's Voice. And for all of us that grew up with mothers, we know that they had quite a voice. They could control you with just a look or a comment, and you knew that you were SOL. Correct?
Yes.
So, you know, I was just thinking, what exactly, what did your mother do when she was a working person besides raising you, Kathy?
She taught kindergarten in the early years, mm-hmm. and then she went back to school and got, master's degrees and multiple certifications, and taught resource room and did some mainstreaming type of work for middle school kids with developmental disabilities. Which
is that where you got your interest in it?
You know, I don't know. I was old enough that I wasn't really following very closely what she was doing. I had my own thing going
on,
you know. But I think I ended up in developmental disability. I loved psychology, and I took a psychology course in high school and decided that would be my major in college. And when I got out of college, the institution in Clinton, Whitten Center, was converting from custodial
right.
care to active treatment, and so they had a lot of positions available that kind of met my degree interests, and so I just ended up there and never left the field. I deinstitutionalized myself in the 80s, I remained just really in love with the field of developmental disabilities, and it was a perfect fit for me to be able to, as you said, help people.
Yeah, exactly.
What I wanted to do.
Yeah. So your mom worked with in the resource. What else
right.
did she do?
When she left public school, she consulted with a private school on some specific projects, but then she was recruited by the governor to participate in the development of performance standards for teachers in the state of South Carolina.
Across the board or for dealing with
across the board, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a pretty awesome task.
It was. So then in her retirement, she kind of picked up her interest in art again, and she did watercolor painting. And then later she discovered synthetic oils and developed a love of abstract art and started really developing a portfolio of abstract art. She participated in an artist cooperative in Lawrence called the Coop, COOP.
Mm-hmm.
Their mascot was a rooster, as you might imagine.
That's
cool. She painted, actually.
She did.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you won't be able to see this on the radio. Jeff had some smart comment to make about, you know, we really didn't need the board set up here. But, you know, for those of you that see the video, there's actually a piece of art that you have up here, a board you use when you're talking to people in
right.
groups, that is, it's called the Sentry Box, and it's by your mom.
It is. And we chose that to represent the concept of families being the sentry, the watch guard for their family members in nursing homes who can't speak for themselves.
Sure.
That painting is based on the Buckingham Palace guards that stand in front of the box and stand guard. And so that's where the sentry box concept came from. And we just thought that was a perfect match for what our organization represents.
You know, I think that's so neat. And I think you said at this point your mom wouldn't realize what you're working on. Right. But I think if she did, she probably would just be so proud that you're doing this and that you're using some of her art to explain parts of the project.
Right. Yes. Each of the concepts that we focus on in Our Mother's Voice is paired with one of her paintings as a visual representation of the concept. That's especially noticeable on our website.
Which is?
www.ourmothersvoice.org.
Ourmothersvoice.org is where you want to go. You know, if you're dealing with issues in nursing homes, I think, you know, one of the things that we're going to get into, particularly after we hear the news, is the fact that how many people, whether you're personally dealing with it or you know somebody else is dealing with it, is frustrated because of the care that they're getting in the nursing homes. Sometimes I think patients are able to speak for themselves, but right. So many times they're not able to get it where somebody is saying, oh, you're just being a bad action.
Difficult.
Here. Difficult, yes.
And so non-compliant.
Non-compliant. Now that's a word for you here. Sometimes us in the real world here feel like we're being non-compliant, if you get my drift. But it's very, very difficult, and so many times then they're medicated, right. And so they have they lose their ability to do anything except to sit there and not be alive, and yet they have so much life left to live.
Exactly, and that's the message that we try to get across to folks who are in this situation, that nursing homes are supposed to provide services to enhance the quality of life of the people who live there, rather than just, as we were talking about with developmental disabilities, warehouse them.
And I think that, unfortunately, that's kind of the perception that we get from a lot of nursing homes. Now, I think there are a lot of, assisted living places where that's not the prevalent. But when you hear the word nursing home so many times, that's what you think about.
That is what you think. And that is not... It's not how all nursing homes are, and it's not how any nursing homes should be. So that's the message that we want to get across to the family, so that they can be empowered advocates for the services that will provide their family members with a quality of life. Now, quality of life means something different when a person has severe dementia than it means when they are working and consulting with the governor's office and,
sure.
You know, advocating for civil rights as our mother did in the 60s. It now means moments of quality. And so the family has to adjust their thinking and not think back to what somebody could do 30 years ago, but think about where they are now and what's meaningful to that person now. It may still be the same activities. You know, for a lot of folks, even in severe dementia, painting might be a wonderful activity. Our mother could no longer handle the paintbrushes, so that wasn't a meaningful activity for her anymore. But spending time with her one and only granddaughter was definitely a meaningful activity. As I think I mentioned earlier, she has a good appetite. She still likes good food, so...
Eating,
you know, eating her meals is a moment of quality for her. So having food available,
bland food would not fit the bill here.
Right.
Yeah. So those are some of the things we're going to get into, is how you determine, even how you find that balance, that where you can help. Somewhere I think I was reading in here, there's also, you know, are you overstepping your bounds as a care advocate? Do you need to step back? How do you balance all this? And this is all a lot of information on ourmothersvoice.org, but Kathy is here with us, so we're going to continue talking with her. Right now it's time for us to join South Carolina Radio News.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos. So I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help. from McDonald's McCafé cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafé mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Hey, I do want to tell you, on WCRS 1450AM.net, we did put a survey up there on should the War Memorial in Uptown Greenwood be changed? Should those plaques be changed? You can go on there. It takes less than 2 minutes to take this survey. We would love to hear what you feel about this. So it's very simple. Three questions, I think. Should it be changed? Should it not be changed? Those are your options there. And the first question has to do with how did you find out about it? How do you know about it? From the radio, from the newspaper, from some other source? So that's all we're asking. If you go on there and take the survey, we sure would appreciate it. I also think, let's see, we have it on Facebook, WCRS Radio, and we also have it on the website. I believe she's put it on the website now. That's WCRS 1450AM.net. Take that survey. Let us know what you think. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to have a special Meet Me at the Diner. Mayor Wilburn Adams is going to join us, and he's going to be here at 3:30. He has to leave around 4:15 or so, so we bumped it back so we could have some good conversation with Mayor Wilburn Adams on this subject. He wants to change out the plaques. Should we do it? Should we not? We need your input. Please let us know. All right, now we're talking with Kathy Bradley here today. She started Our Mother's Voice. She has a lot of experience in working with developmental disabilities, and in fact, she spent a lifetime of working with it. So, who knew that this would be the path to your retirement?
I certainly didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was very timely. I mean, I retired 6 weeks before my mother suddenly declined into severe dementia, and actually 6 months after my father-in-law declined into severe dementia suddenly. His choice was to receive in-home services, so I assisted my mother-in-law in getting those in place for him, and then I retired, and then my own mother declined suddenly and ended up needing to be placed in a nursing facility.
And so many of baby boomers are
yes.
dealing with this now. And, of course, it's kind of like, I want to liken it to Witten Center changing from warehousing to doing something that's good for the client, the patient. This right. is the same type of thing. We want to have a quality of life for
exactly.
and you know, as we look at our own selves getting older, yes. we want to have that quality of life for ourselves too.
And I think that the aging of the boomers is actually what has lit a fire in the aging services environment, that the boomers, I have read, demand the quality of life that they want and are less inclined to accept what has historically gone on in nursing facilities. And I think that is very much the case, and we want it not only for ourselves in the future, but for our parents now.
That's right. So I know that, we're not going to talk about your mother's case specifically, but when your mother went into a nursing home, I'm sure you had high hopes that this would alleviate a lot of stress on your family.
Yes. And in particular on my father.
Sure. Yes. And that wasn't the case.
No, it was not. She lost her ability to speak, and for females in my family, that's
catastrophic.
Yes, it is a catastrophic loss.
The men in her family were just thinking that would be wonderful, but
and of course she was also an assertive person and did not hesitate to
make her
needs and opinions known. When she lost her ability to do that by speaking, she had to rely on her only means of communication, which was her behavior. She did still have a little bit of scrambled speech, and because of my experience working with people with developmental disabilities, many of whom had little or no speech, and many of whom used behavior to communicate, I was able to kind of interpret for her both her attempts at language and her behavioral outbursts, they were considered by the staff, to let the staff know what she was trying to tell them, whether it was, I want to go for a walk down the hall, or I want you to treat me a little bit gentler when you're giving me a bath,
mm-hmm.
To I want to be waked up by an alarm clock instead of by a staff member walking in my room and raising their voice to make sure I hear them first
right.
thing in the morning. Those types
Just,
of
and those
things,
are so little those are little things.
They are, but they greatly impact a person's quality of life. And when you think about it, you give up so much when you move into a facility.
Sure.
You give up having your own time to get up. You give up creating your own menu. You give up a lot of the activities that you used to do when you were independent. You can't do any of that anymore. And so those little things are the things that make the difference in your quality of life.
Kitty Callan has a famous song, Little Things Mean a Lot.
Yes, I'm familiar with that song, and
right,
that is very true.
Exactly. And so as we move forward, it's important for people to know. But one of the things that I think is real difficult for family members, advocates, to know is where they stand. Where can they input something, and when should they step back and say, not my business? And then you have the whole other side of it, where a family just literally dumps somebody in the nursing home and says, she's your problem, he's your problem, I'm out of here.
Yeah. And a lot of times that is as much a result of just exhaustion and not knowing what else to do and some guilt because mm-hmm. you can't take care of your loved one in the home anymore, you know. And I experienced all of those when I was working with families of people who had developmental disabilities. So I understand all of that. And, you know, you ask about where the family member should step forward and where they should step back. And I'm not a person who steps back, so I really can't answer that question for you. But the family members are a part of the team that provides care for a nursing home resident. A lot of times they're made to feel like they're just a guest,
mm-hmm.
and that's not the case.
What do you mean as a guest? What do you mean by that?
That when the care plan is developed, it's developed by the professionals and the family.
That have all the answers.
Right.
Right.
And
okay.
and the yeah.
okay.
And the family member just comes and, you know, if
signs
they're involved,
off on
exactly,
it.
They just sign off and they're considered a guest. And sometimes the facility will even tell family, you know, you're a guest. But that's not the case. They are a member of the team. And especially if the resident is not able to participate actively in the planning process, it becomes essential that family participate in that planning process from the very beginning, providing information about their loved one, helping to provide information for the assessments, but also for the person's preferences and choices and likes and dislikes and routines and so forth, so that the assessment process is complete and thorough. With that information, then the team, including the family, can develop a plan for care and for activities for the resident that is appropriate and meaningful to that resident, and much more likely to provide a quality of care and a quality of life for that resident that will maintain their health, their happiness.
You know, we've all heard stories of the person that goes to a nursing home and in less than a month or 2 months or something, they literally, because I think a lot of times they didn't have the right plan or the right care,
right.
they just went ahead and died.
Right.
They
right.
just failed.
Exactly. That does happen quite frequently. And our mother, had severe dementia when she went into care. She's been in care for 5.5 years now.
Wow.
Yes. And she's generally very healthy. She has long periods of time between even cold, you know. And that was not always the case. We went through periods where about every 6 weeks she got dehydrated. But one of the things that we did was to advocate for more attention to the issue of hydration. And the
from
facility,
our mother's voice, you're saying, is that, or for
well,
you personally?
For our family.
For your family,
yeah. But we advocated for our mother individually, but we also have always made a point of emphasizing to her facility that we're not just advocating for her. Our mother would not just advocate for her. So we're advocating for everyone in that facility. And in our mother's case, the hydration program has meant that she's had fewer other illnesses. She's had longer periods of health between illnesses. She's had fewer trips to the hospital.
But what do you do when you're faced with a situation where the nursing facility says, that's okay, we've got this? You are you a professional? Do you know what to do here? I mean, in your
well,
case, Kathy,
yes.
You can say yes. But what is the person that isn't a professional that is looking at this, and maybe you notice that your mom isn't drinking as much water or what she used to drink or something, and you're concerned about it, and they go, well, that's okay, we'll take care of it, and don't you worry about it, we've got it.
Well, I think follow-up is a real important thing. They may not have it. And you should be able to tell whether they have it or not by how frequently dehydration is an issue. I think the biggest tool that a family member can have is to know the regulations.
Oh, my God. Here you go talking about regulations. We'll be here all afternoon, folks. We might as well just sit back.
But they have to be educated to that. They have to know what
But how do they find out the information, Kathy?
Actually, we have a link from our website.
Okay.
And also, we provide just kind of a narrative that gives a lot of the information from the regulations, kind of restates it.
Is it all
puts
in
it
that
in a
long...
little bit language, you okay. know, the little bit different language that maybe is easier to understand. Provide some examples of what the quality outcomes would look like for an individual. It's not real easy material to understand,
sure.
unfortunately, but it is a huge tool. And when facilities know that the family knows what's supposed to be going on and can use some of that language when requesting, demanding, requiring the appropriate care and services, then the facility becomes much more likely to live up to their responsibilities.
Now, I know a lot of people live in fear that mom or dad might have to leave this facility if they don't shape up and act accordingly.
Yeah, and I've heard stories of people actually being told that by facilities. There are a couple of things that families probably need to know about that. One is that the state law says that a facility cannot admit somebody whose needs they can't meet. So if they've admitted the person, they've pretty much said, yeah, we can meet her needs. Now, needs change over time, of course, but what families often don't understand is that it is the facility's responsibility to analyze the needs, to accurately identify the needs, and to come up with a plan to address the needs, and not just simply to say, well, we don't do that, or that's not the way we always have done things. This is required, and all of those efforts have to be documented, and it has to be demonstrated that all efforts have been exhausted to meet this person's needs before discharge or transfer can even be discussed. A lot of families just don't realize that.
So, but what, okay, what does a family do that, we're talking about ourmothersvoice.org, that's right, ourmothersvoice.org. So if you want to check out more information, there's a whole lot more information there. But Kathy, what does a family do that says, gosh, I don't know what to do. I'm not getting anywhere with this facility. I can't handle this. I mean, I've tried. I've done this. I've done that. They just aren't taking care of my mom or dad appropriately. What can somebody, what level, where can they go?
Okay. Well, I always suggest that people make written notes and try to identify specific policies or regulations that are in conflict with the nursing home's practices. Because if you can't get results from the staff, from the management, from the administrator, and if it's part of a corporation, from corporate office, then there are a couple of different ways you can go. If you want to just address an individual situation, there's a long-term care ombudsman program that comes out of the Lieutenant Governor's Office on Aging in South Carolina. There are ombudsman's programs in every state, and by the way, we have links to that information on the website as well. And they will take individual complaints, and they will do an individual investigation and follow up on those individual complaints. In South Carolina, I know they also refer those complaints to the state regulatory agency for their consideration. The other way to go is more of a systems approach, and that is to take the specific information to the regulatory agency directly. In South Carolina, that's the Department of Health and Environmental Control, and they have a division that addresses both licensing and certification. Licensing,
it's DHEC, isn't it?
DHEC, yes.
DHEC, there you go. Everybody knows DHEC. Yeah. There you go.
Licensing every facility that provides services in the state should be licensed. There are facilities that accept Medicare and Medicaid who also must comply with federal regulations.
Whether your family member is
A
Medicaid or Medicare
That's
patient.
Right. One of those federal regulations, and this is why I recommend to all families to get familiar with those regulations, because if the facility accepts any Medicare or Medicaid money, then one of those federal regulations states that all residents must receive the same access to the same quality and services as regardless of their source of payment.
Being paid, right.
So that's a very powerful thing to know.
That's right, and that's why you're here discussing this, because
yes,
it's a very powerful thing to know.
It is. And, you know, if you can't get results with the other methods of intervention, then the state regulating agency has a complaint system, a complaint reporting system. And so families can go there with their information. They will ask for it in writing. And so the documentation that the family has developed over time will be very helpful in that process.
It's also very helpful to have this documented, because it's hard to remember.
Exactly.
What, you know, you think you're prepared to go in and fight for your cause,
right,
until you sit down and you go,
they're not treating my mom right, and then that's all you've got. You
right.
know, and they really can't act on that. They need to have the specifics, even dates and times, if possible, as well as specific incidents where there were issues and problems. And if the family has attempted to work with the facility to remedy the situation, that documentation is very important too, because it helps to point to the fact that it's not just an individual situation, it's a systems issue.
Sure.
And so many of them are. I don't think that there are facilities that single individuals out for a particular type of treatment. It's much more likely that that is the facility practice, and that there are other people at that facility that are undergoing the same issues. That's the way that our mother advocated. She advocated for groups without a voice, and so that's what our mother's voice wants to get out as its message.
So the name of the website is ourmothersvoice.org. If you are dealing with any of these issues, you really should go check this out and school yourself and become more informed about this, because it's really, really, really going to make a difference. And even if you're not dealing with it today or tomorrow, but you know it's coming down the road, it sure is a lot more helpful to know the type of things. But the other thing that I think, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show, is quality of life is different for every different person.
Right.
And at different stages of our life. Just like quality of life for a baby is a whole lot different than the quality of life for that teenager.
Yes, it is.
That's right. So the same thing, I think, goes for as we age.
Absolutely it does. In fact, the painting from my mother that we use to represent quality of life is a painting that's taken from her experience with her family. She had a reunion of her brother and sister and that generation, and she took her only grandchild, my daughter, to the mountains with her, and they went whitewater rafting. Of course, they didn't tell me until they got back, but but that painting is just such a wonderful representation of my mother's enthusiasm and her adventurous spirit and her willingness to take her granddaughter into the whitewater. So at that point,
I detect some issues there, Kathy.
I'm delighted that she did it. It was really a very cool experience. And that's why I chose that painting, to represent that concept. But at this point, of course, that has nothing to do with my mother's quality of life.
Exactly.
She's not able to go whitewater rafting and
would not be happy
about it.
She is able to enjoy her food.
Yes, very much so.
And so that's why that's important for her.
Exactly. And I've tried to make an effort to, that the facility has special events, teas, for Mother's Day and Valentine's Day, and I try to make a point of taking her to those teas. She has to have ground food now, but she will eat a finger sandwich, she will eat a cookie, she'll eat an almond whole, crunch on the almond, you know.
Right.
She loves that kind of food, and so that to me is a moment of quality for her. She looks at smiling faces and responds when she's alert, and those moments are fewer and farther between now than they were even 2 years ago, even 6 months ago. But when she's alert, if she can see a smiling face and hear a familiar voice, those are moments of quality for her.
And that's what it's all about, and that's
absolutely
what we should all strive for, not only for our parents or family members that we're dealing with, but, you know, it's for all of us.
It is. Very much so. Yes.
You know, one last thing I want to make sure that everybody knows, and we're going to have to be quick on this because we've talked too much today. But you went to Washington, D.C. back in November.
I did.
This was pretty exciting.
It was very exciting for me. Our Mother's Voice is just a real tiny, tiny organization. I'm basically the person that does the grunt work for the organization, and we have a board of directors. But it's all volunteer. We received an opportunity to participate in a presentation at the National Conference for the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, which has been around for, gosh, probably 35 almost, yeah, since 90. Well, they were instrumental in getting the Nursing Home Reform Act of 1987 passed, federal law. And so I got the opportunity to go up there and participate in that conference, and I'm also on their leadership council, which met while they were up there.
All right, so. You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Kathy. I just had to say that. You know, it was really, really important for you to be able to go there, and you got a really good reception for this. Now, this is a point I wanted to make up there. People were very impressed with what you were doing down here in South Carolina.
They were. It was very exciting. I got good feedback both at the end of the session and throughout the rest of the conference. I had people coming up to me from New York, from Colorado, even from South Carolina,
yeah,
to tell me that we were doing good things. And that was very rewarding for me. And it's also opened up some doors. Our Mother's Voice just wants to get the word out to as many people as possible. And so participating in this national conference put us on so many other radars throughout the country. And I feel like we're poised to expand our influence. And that's what our mother would have done. And so it's just very rewarding to be able to carry our mother's voice through our mother's voice to advocate for people throughout the country and even farther.
Absolutely. Well, Kathy Bradley, I know if your mother was able to speak to us, she'd be so impressed with what you've done. Ourmothersvoice.org is the place where you can go to get more information. And I know you're going to hear more from Kathy Bradley because she is going to keep expanding this thing, even though she is in retirement. She has found her second or third career here, and I think you were a perfect person to put this together. And, you know,
thank you.
Sometimes I think life is just kismet, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
So thanks so much for coming up here to Greenwood and talking to us about it.
Thank you, Ann. I really much appreciate the opportunity to be here.
All right. Check out ourmothersvoice.org on the internet. You'll find a lot of good information. And if you've got questions, I'm sure there's a way to correspond.
Yes, contact at ourmothersvoice.org.
Okay. So you can do that today. Hey, we'll post this on the website. And thanks so much for coming up here today, Kathy.
Thank you, Ann, for having me.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.